order the meeting of Alaska City Council. Call to order at 6 p.m. Tuesday, April 14th, 2026. Ask Councilman Bell to read her mission statement.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman? Mr. Longo? Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Chastain?
Here.
Mr. Tongo?
Here.
Mr. Turekoff?
Here. We do have a quorum. Councilman Coleman and Longo are excused. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag, United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to welcome everyone in the chambers this evening. Appreciate you being here. Those that are online, Zoom, welcome. First item is the awards and presentations. First item is the city employment anniversary of Thomas Rufus, Unalaska Fire Department, for 10 years. Please join me down here, Thomas, by the table. Please join me in recognizing Thomas Rufus for his 10 years of dedicated service to the city of Unalaska. Thomas began his journey with the city in 2016 as associate planner and planning department. In 2024, he transitioned to the Department of Fire and EMS, where he took the role of firefighter. In both positions, Tom has demonstrated commitment, professionalism, strong work ethic that exemplifies the excellence in public service. His contributions have been greatly valued, and the city is grateful for the dedication he has shown throughout his time here. Thomas, in recognition of your 10 years of service, please accept this plaque and gift basket as a token of our appreciation for your dedicated service. Congratulations on a well-deserved milestone. Very well, thank you. Thank you, Thomas. Says the same thing. Here's your plaque for the 10-year service, and thank you very much. While you're watching on the TV or whatever, you can have some snacks.
Next council meeting.
Next council meeting? Okay, great. Congratulations, and thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. First, mom, dad, hi, listening on the radio. Thank you guys. It's been a wonderful 10 years and I'm looking forward to many more. It's been a beautiful community and very welcoming. So thank you everyone for, welcoming me in. Yeah. Great.
Okay. Thank you. Big round of applause. A lot of hard work he's done. One more. I have another award, which is a Community Extra Mile Award. Riley, please join us in recognizing Riley Spetz, recipient of the City of Unalaska's Extra Mile Award. There you go. Very good basketball team. Good job, coach. Riley has dedicated many years to supporting the youth of our community through his volunteer coaching and mentorship. In addition to his role as school principal, he's consistently gives his time to coach youth basketball, currently leading the girls' team while continuing to support the boys' program. Through his dedication both on and off the court, Riley has helped shape young people in our community into respectful and compassionate individuals. He emphasizes individual skill development, teamwork, effort, and a growth mindset, teaching lessons that extend far beyond the basketball court. Parents, community members, and visiting teams have recognized culture he has built within his teams. His players consistently demonstrate sportsmanship and pride in representing Unalaska, reflecting the strong value he instills in students he coaches. Through his leadership, mentorship, and unwavering dedication to youth of Unalaska, Riley has truly gone the extra mile in strengthening our community. On behalf of the City of Unalaska, thank you for your commitment to students, for the positive impact you continue to make in the lives of so many young people. Congratulations, Riley, and thank you for the extra mile.
Thank you, Vince, and members of the council. I've been here 10 years, and the community really welcomed me here in 2016 when I moved here and made me feel like I belonged here. So it's been a great 10 years. Huge thanks to my wife, Jill, and our little guy, Calvin. I wouldn't be able to do all the things I do without her support. And I've had a lot of really positive influences in my life, and I've been lucky because of that. And so thank you, everybody, and we love this place. So.
Thank you, Riley. Thank you very much. Big round of applause. Good job. Thanks. Okay, thank you to both the recipients of the awards this evening. Thank you for the students for being here supporting Riley and the community. Okay, we'll move on. Adoption of the agenda. May I have a motion to adopt the agenda, please?
I move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Dungle, seconded by Councilman Shasteen.
Yeah, Mayor, I'd like to make an amendment to the agenda. I'd like to move to amend the agenda by inserting item 7, oath of office for the fire chief, Edward Affey.
Moved by Councilman Luby, seconded by Councilman Tungle to amend the agenda to include swearing in of the fire chief. Questions or comments on the amendment? Hearing none, and a motion, need a vote on the amendment. Roll call.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Shasteen?
Yes.
A roll call vote to amend the agenda passes with a vote of 4-0. Need a roll call on the main motion to adopt the amended motion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Shasteen?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Thank you. With a roll call vote of 4-0, the agenda as amended has been approved. Next item is the oath of office. Please, Chief Edward M. Athey, take the oath of office as fire chief.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Edward M. Athey, do hereby do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of the fire chief of the city of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Alaska, and the code of ordinances of the city of Unalaska.
I, Edward M. Athey, do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of fire chief of the city of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Alaska, and the code of ordinances of the city of Unalaska.
Go ahead, sir, with your oath.
I pledge to faithfully, honestly, and impartially discharge the duties of fire chief to the best of my ability. I will honor and respect the mission, goals, values, and policies of the City of Unalaska and the Unalaska Fire Department. I swear to obey the lawful orders of my superiors, to abide by the Fire Service Code of Ethics, to support the Constitution of the United States and the State of Alaska, and to observe and uphold the laws of the United States, the State of Alaska, and the City of Unalaska. I will at all times, respect the property and rights of all people, recognizing the badge of my office is a symbol of public faith and trust. I take this oath knowing full well the responsibility of my office and promise to act at all times with integrity, honesty, and honor, so help me God. I take this oath freely, without the least equivocation, mental reservation, or self-evasion of mind whatsoever.
Congratulations, Mr. Athey. Thank you.
Congratulations, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, and congratulations, Chief. Move on to the next item on our agenda, approve the minutes of the previous meeting. I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the meeting held March 24, 2026, as presented.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of March 24th, 2026.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Bell. Hearing no objections, the proposed minutes are approved. Next item on our agenda is the city manager's report, and I'll turn this over to the interim city manager, Ebner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. One update for you on an item regarding a landfill. The details were just finalized on this yesterday, so it didn't make the written report. The landfill is going to be closed for regular trash service this Saturday, April 18th, to allow contractors to replace the baler conveyor system. The work requires additional prep time, so the landfill will reopen on Tuesday, April 21st. The scale will remain open during the regular hours on Saturday to continue accepting scrap metal and junk vehicles, so those disposal activities will not be interrupted. A couple highlights from my written report. First, a quick update on Summer Bay Road. Public Works continues to make progress on the storm damage repairs. I toured the site with Public Works Director on the 31st of March, and several sections of the roadbed have already been repaired using on-site material. Some of the larger washouts are going to require additional gravel, rock barriers, etc., and staff is working to clear a sand drift that formed at Summers Bay Bridge. Based on the current progress and material availability, we do anticipate reopening that road by Memorial Day weekend. When it does reopen, certain portions of the corridor may be limited to one-lane traffic just because of the size of some of those washouts. If we can open the road sooner, we will. Second, a brief update on scrap metal reduction rate and the progress we've made on that. Since the 50% discount went into effect on April 1st, we've seen a strong response from the community. The landfills received 107.5 tons of scrap metal and 10 junk vehicles in the first 2 weeks. Residents and businesses have been contacting public utilities for clarification on disposal requirements, which is helping ensure materials arrive properly, prepared, and keeps operations running smoothly. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have on my report.
Any questions or Abner? Councilman Tongo?
On the Captain's Bay extension water line, where are we on that one now?
The water line, we received the permit to operate, and that has been put into service.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Tongo. Any further questions? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, on the air service, that's a concern for a lot of people in the community, and most people might not know what a small community air service development program is. Can you just kind of explain that a little bit for anybody that might wonder what that is?
So the small community air service development program is just one of the many different grants that are out there available through federal sources. This one in particular funds studies and planning efforts in order to try to improve air service in small communities. It's one that we qualify for. And the purpose of what we're looking at doing with that application is to try to build our case for future improvements of the air service here. And that aligns with the federal priorities that council passed during our priority setting earlier this year.
Great. So that will open it up if everything goes according to what we would like to see. It's a way to expand the runway so that we can bring other airlines in if they choose to, or is it a subsidy? Are we looking at subsidies?
That specific grant would allow us to undertake a planning effort to make sure that we can present our case for the economic need and the community need for air service and try to figure out what service we need over the next 10 or 20 years in order to then use that plan to kind of guide the development rather than just continuing with what we have.
Okay, yeah, well, it gets complicated and trying to just explain it so that a lot of the community members, including myself, knows what we're talking about. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, comments? I had one on the one-way traffic. Did I miss it, or what was the deal on the Summer Bay Road to have one-way traffic at some point? Or?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, there's certain areas of that road where the washouts are just big enough that you can't have two lanes of traffic opposing traffic really safely. So we'll be adding either rock barriers or barricades of some sort along those areas, and there'll be signage that it's one-lane traffic. And so there's enough clearance that you can visually see any oncoming vehicles like we do on some of the other side dirt roads, and you'll just have to wait for each other to pass.
Great. Thank you. I hope that the drivers that do go out there late at night, which usually happens, are safe and won't have any accidents on Summers Bay Road this summer. Any further questions or comments? Councilman Chastain?
Yeah, along the lines of access to Summers Bay, has the city plowed Overland Drive yet to grant access to Summers Bay, or is there a plan to plow Overland Drive in the near future?
Public Works Director is here, and we'll come up and answer that question.
Yes, Overland is open as of last week.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for City Manager's report? Thank you, Webner. Next item is community input and announcements. This is time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use them, and state your name.
Hello, Mayor and Council. Roger Blakely, PCR Director. First announcement is the public, Unalaska Public Library will celebrate National Library Week next week, April 19th through 25th. And they're going to celebrate it with free coffee, tea, hot cocoa, daily prizes for the patrons, mini surveys, and much more. Drop in on Wednesday, April 22nd for a staff demonstration of our e-book checkout and streaming video service, which you can access for free with your library card. Search for a hidden golden ticket in the library. If you find it, you can win a Dutch Grind gift card. The event is sponsored in part by Friends of the Public Library. The second announcement I have tonight is we have started a women's Taekwondo class for women 13 and up on Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. at the Burma Road Chapel. This is a chance to build your confidence and strength, learn self-defense, have fun, get fit. It's only for women. So, men, you can't go. So, anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger.
I'm Lynn Crane speaking for Dr. Virginia Hatfield because she couldn't be here tonight. Museum of the Aleutians has is collaborating on access to cultural heritage with the Kalawangan tribe tomorrow, April 15th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m., hosted by the Kalawangan Wellness Culture Night. Learn from Inungan artifacts to strengthen cultural knowledge, and that's at the tribal office. Then on April 27th, which I believe is a Monday, the museum board of directors meeting will take place at 5 p.m., It's available via Zoom and also at the Unalaska Public Library. And then Thursday, April 30th, is Museum of the Aleutians Trivia Night at 6:30 p.m. at the Norwegian Rat Saloon. So that's always a lot of fun. And then since Catherine isn't here, I'll remind folks again about the upcoming wine tasting for the Unalaska Visitors Bureau. That's on Saturday, May 2nd, and you can get tickets from any board member or from Catherine. So.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council. Christy Fassbender, COO at IFHS. Just wanted to let everyone know that on April 25th from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., we have partnered with the Q Tribe and APIA, and we're going to be hosting a health fair. We'll have plenty of raffle prizes to give away that include a couple of under-the-desk bicycles, a couple of ellipticals that are under the desk as well. You can get free A1C testing, get your blood pressure checked, and Lori and Greg will both be there to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. What?
Okay, now I'm speaking on behalf of USAVE. I'm Lynn Crane, USAVE. USAVE is collaborating with KUCB to hold a poetry night at the Unalaska Public Library next Thursday, April 23rd. I believe it starts at 6 p.m. You can read your own work or read one or more of your favorite poems. Those are always fun, so I encourage people to come to that. USAVE is collaborating with the Kalawangan tribe to hold a short march to draw attention to the ongoing crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women and missing and murdered Indigenous people. Native American and Alaska Native women experience disproportionately high rates of missing person cases and violence compared to other races in the United States, and it's often described as an epidemic, and it's, although you hear people talking about it more, it does not seem to be getting that much better, and it is a serious, serious problem here in Alaska. Indigenous women are murdered at rates 10 times higher than the national average in some areas and are over twice as likely to experience violence or rape compared to other demographics. So we will hold a march on Tuesday, May 5th. We haven't announced the route yet. I think I got to get permission from some folks and see how the tribe wants to handle it. So we'll let you know where it's going to be. And then finally, I really want to thank everyone who participated in the USAVE Soup Off, either by donating or entering soup or by attending and bidding on auction items. We had a great turnout. We had so many new members show up that we ran out of new member forms. The soups were delicious, and we raised about $25,000 that night. And if you consider the cash donations that we received just before and just after, the total raise was about $31,000. So we are profoundly grateful to everyone who participated. Thank you.
Wow, great turnout. Thanks. Any further announcements of interest to the community? I have one. I got a text message just half an hour or so before. We're announcing a car wash on Saturday, fundraiser for the cathedral, bake sale, and car wash at the Unalaska Christian Fellowship from 2 to 5 p.m. Saturday. That's it. Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
Yes, sir. We have Mr. Kelty.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, my name is Frank Kelty. Just want to give a quick little seafood update. We're just about complete on the pollock A season. We have, a week ago, we had about 29,000 metric tons left for the shoreside sector. Altogether, it was about 39,000 metric tons, but we had the shoreside sector had the majority at 29,000. So I'm expecting that the fishery be wrapped up either at the end of this week or early next week. Been a fairly steady fishing the whole season, and from what I understand, they had good product and good pollock row. But like I said, right now we're at 93%. On the crab situation, the only one ongoing right now is the snow crab fishery. We're about 6.7 million as of Monday morning. We have 2.7 million still to catch. We're, I think, at 80%, something like that right now. And that fishery has been going fairly well. The tanner crab fishery, Barredi Tanner, wrapped up about a week ago. They harvested the complete quota. Actually, they went about 18,000 pounds over, but it was 11.2 million on tanner crab. Golden and king crab was also wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. They completed the total harvest of 4.1 million. And moving on to a quick look at Pacific cod, we're at about 56% on the federal water fishery, 73,000 metric tons have been harvested, about 161 million pounds. And like I said, we're about 56%, so we still have a ways to go there. And then on the state water cod fishery, we're at about 54% complete. They've harvested 22 million pounds as of yesterday morning, and still have about 18-something million, I think 17 or 18 million left to harvest. So that hopefully they'll be able to get that quota before the fish all disperse, the cod disperse. So that's all I have right now, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Frank. Appreciate you keeping on top of everything for us. Any further announcements on Zoom or telephone?
No one else, sir, made an indication, so that's it.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, next is the public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda if they don't want to wait until the item comes up for a regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please go to the podium and state your name. Anyone in Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay. Hearing no public comment, we'll move on. Next item. Public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set for public hearing. 3-minute time limit per person. Please come to the podium and state your name. No one in chambers, anybody on Zoom, telephone, public hearing?
No, sir. No one on Teams.
All right, thank you. Let's see, the first item in our public hearing and the public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2026-07, amending Unalaska Code of Ordinance Title II Administration and Title III Personnel, modifying the Assistant City Manager position to title to Deputy City Manager. Does anyone wish to speak? Anyone with written or Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
The public hearing for Ordinance 2026-07, hearing no public comment, is now closed. The public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2026-08, amending Unalaska Code of Ordinance Title II Administration, Title III Personnel, Title VI Revenue and Finance, Title VIII Planning and Land Use Development, Title IX Business License Regulations, Title XII Animal Control, Title XIII Public Peace, Morale, Welfare and Safety, Title XIV Vehicles and Traffic, Title 18, Ports and Port Facilities, to substitute Unalaska Police Department and Chief of Police for Unalaska Department of Public Safety and Director of Public Safety, consistent with Ordinance 2018-11, and to make other corresponding changes to repeal to replace Chapter 2.44 and Section 1408080. Does anyone wish to speak? Hearing none in chambers, City Clerk, or any written comments, or does anyone on Teams or the phone wish to speak?
No, sir. No one made an indication. None.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no public comments on Ordinance 2026, public hearing for Ordinance 2026-08 is now closed. Next item is our work session. We have a motion and a second to go into a work session.
I make a motion to go into a work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, seconded by Councilman Chastain. Are there any objections? Hearing no objection, we are now in a work session at 6:35 p.m. First item is a presentation of Unalaska Healthcare Planning Assessments. I'll turn this over to the City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Tonight we'll hear draft results of the Healthcare Planning Assessment. We have representatives of Agnew Beck online. They've been working on this over the past several months. The purpose of the work was to step back and look at the overall healthcare landscape in Unalaska, consider our strengths, our gaps, and models that could realistically support long-term stability here. And with that, I will turn it over to the consultants to walk us through their findings and recommendations.
Thank you so much, Cameron, and thank you for the opportunity to do this work, Riley, and I have really enjoyed working with you and working with partners at IFHS and APIA and our two site visits out to Unalaska this year. This evening, we're going to walk through a fairly lengthy report that is currently marked draft. So we're looking forward to hearing your comments and questions and feedback this evening, and then we'll work with Cameron to finalize the report so that you have a final form. It is a lengthy report, so we're going to be touching on just some highlights from the process, and we welcome your questions and reactions and feedback. We'll pause at the end to do that. Cameron, is everyone in the room able to see my screen currently with the slides up?
They can see your slides in the room.
Okay, perfectly. Perfect. That's great. Today, we'll touch on four topics. We'll start with a brief overview of the project and study overall. We'll spend the bulk of our time walking through the findings in the study, and then we'll close with the recommendations for moving forward and then have an opportunity for questions. As Cameron mentioned, we've been working on this study for several months now, and Cameron touched on the purpose of the study, which was really to look at a broader picture of the healthcare landscape in Unalaska. After we started the project, we had responded to an RFP that was put out by the city and drafted a suggested methodology for the project. But once we started, we worked with Cameron to develop some guiding questions for each of the areas of interest in the project, and you'll see those on the screen here. The final report is organized and grouped by those first three objectives, and then the recommendations and overall findings can fall into each of these categories. I'm going to hand it over to Riley to share more detail about our approach for the project, and then we'll switch gears to findings.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Thank you all for having me this evening. We took a phased approach, which you can see highlighted here on the screen, to go about this project. And that began with the discovery phase, where we conducted research on Unalaska's community composition, the healthcare service landscape, and also held the majority of our interviews. We then moved into the analysis phase, which explored research and case studies of models for healthcare delivery, and included the community gathering where we sought to get feedback on those models of care that we identified in our research. And lastly, we developed recommendations based on these first two phases and brought together that information to develop these recommendations and deliver to you all in this report.
Thanks, Riley. First, we're going to start with the healthcare landscape, which was the first component of the work. This part of the project was really focused on three questions: what community and population dynamics influence healthcare in Unalaska, what does the service landscape look like, and what are the gaps or limitations that exist in terms of infrastructure, access, and capacity. We just have two slides, and like I mentioned, the report is much more lengthy. So at a high level, we'll talk about the community composition, and then we'll switch gears and talk about the healthcare landscape of service providers. The community composition, as you all, I'm sure, know, is around 5,000 residents in 2025, and that number of people circulating within the community can vary widely during the year, depending on where we're at with the fishing season. So there's a stable resident population, but a very substantial fluctuating seasonal population. Some highlights of the data pulls that we did are that there are a higher percentage of individuals who speak another language other than English at home. There's a higher percentage on average of residents who moved to Unalaska from a different county, state, or country in the past year. What that means for healthcare is that for every five patients a healthcare provider in Unalaska sees each year, one of those patients is going to be a new patient establishing care. Rates of residents who seek preventive care are lower in Unalaska than they are on average within the state. And the resident population is proportionally more covered by employer-sponsored health insurance and less covered by Medicaid than the statewide population. And you can see, just looking at these charts on the screen, this is a chart on the left that compares the age and gender split of Unalaska's population to the statewide population. And on average, Unalaska's population is younger and more male than the state population. This next slide has an illustration of the various types of services that you might see in a community. There's a key at the bottom of the screen that highlights the services that are available in the community, those that are limited in their availability, those that are not available, and then those that are planned. The green stars are highlighting services that were specifically called out during the qualitative portion of the study. Unalaska has a lot of good things going. There are strong providers. There are at least one option for most types of outpatient care, some rehabilitative care, and urgent care. On average, though, Unalaska has fewer providers when compared to the state overall. The total provider rate in Unalaska is 5.1 per 1,000 population, compared to 40.2 per 1,000 for Alaska overall. When looking at the rate of primary care providers versus the statewide rate, the rate is 1.3 per 1,000 compared to 3.6 per 1,000. And then the Unalaska's mental health provider rate is 1.1 per 1,000 compared to statewide at 7.6 per 1,000. There are limited long-term palliative care, acute care, and inpatient care options, and also some limited specialty care options locally. Care beyond the services that are offered locally or that those are those that are available via telehealth all require off-island travel. And one of the comments that we heard throughout the interview process and the focus group process was that the emergency care is an essential and under-resourced service in the community. Switching gears, we're going to talk a little bit now about healthcare delivery models. I'll hand it back to Riley for this section.
Yeah, thank you. To guide this area of work, we had three questions that steered our research here. The first being, what are the range of ways that local governments and municipalities engage in healthcare delivery? And how do these local governments and municipalities financially support federally qualified health centers as well as tribal health organizations? This first question is aimed at giving the city an understanding of municipal engagement in health services elsewhere and the range of which those might take place. Our second question in this area was, what are some successful models of rural healthcare delivery? And this was aimed at focusing on how other communities have made rural healthcare more manageable to deliver and sustainable. And lastly, we looked at what are some successful models for emergency services in rural areas, and this was explored more specifically, recognizing the challenges that Unalaska faces with delivering emergency care. And to touch on our findings for the first question, Lauren, if you're able to toggle, perfect, thank you. Some of the key findings here are that local governments support healthcare services in kind of two main ways, which we call direct and indirect or in-kind support. And under those two different categories of support, they can kind of fall into what you see on the screen here. That can involve kind of direct ownership and operation of health services. They can be providers of pass-through grants and federal and state funds. They can provide funding support directly, as well as support for capital projects. They can also provide tax exemptions or land to support healthcare services in different ways. And we explore these various avenues and levels of involvement in the report and highlight different clinics and hospitals in Alaska that have exemplified some of these models and provide details about what that looks like to give kind of an understanding for how other municipalities are supporting healthcare services in their communities and the range of ways in which that could look. Then moving into the second research question we had about successful models of rural healthcare delivery, we identified six main models that have been seen as successful in supporting rural communities with their healthcare needs. You can see those six models listed here. The first one we identified was a hub and spoke system, which links smaller rural clinics and hospitals to a larger, more regional center, which would be the hub, that provides more specialized and high acuity services. Some examples of this in Alaska would be South Central Foundation and Providence Health. And then there's a handful of others that we document in the report as well. The second model we identified was integration, and these collaborations and partnerships through integration is a way that healthcare providers can navigate the challenges of rural healthcare delivery. These arrangements can be structured in several ways, ranging from loosely integrated to tightly integrated arrangements. And the report talks through some examples of that spectrum of integration, highlighting things such as regional collaboration, service line partnerships, clinical affiliation, and on the tighter, more tightly integrated scale, even full acquisition and ownership. We then explored telehealth and technology-enabled care as a critical tool for healthcare access. And both telehealth and technology-enabled care is being utilized currently in many ways and is also a growing area rapidly across healthcare in both rural and urban settings. We then looked into recruitment and retention strategies that have been successful in other communities and included information about participating in federal service corp programs, as well as education and training programs or coalition building that could help strengthen workforce capacity and retention in rural communities. We then looked into research on fractional staffing, which was another model explored that gives rural hospitals flexible, affordable access to specialty care by letting them bring in clinicians for scheduled part-time coverage rather than employing full-time physicians. And lastly, community paramedicine was explored after research found this model being utilized in Fairbanks and Cooper Landing as a potential way of strengthening EMS systems and tailoring services to local needs. And as the last research question for successful models of rural emergency care specifically, we identified a few models of care here as well. Community paramedicine was identified again because it trains paramedics to deliver primary and chronic care in patients' homes, which in some communities has reduced non-emergency 911 while expanding rural healthcare access and preserving emergency resources. Rural emergency hospitals have a specific designation that allow them to refocus on emergency and outpatient care with enhanced Medicare reimbursement, flexible staffing, and support for clinic reimbursement and retention. Teleemergency and telehealth in this setting is able to support emergency care spaces by using real-time virtual connections with specialists to improve clinical decision-making, coordinations, and outcomes for rural EMS and emergency departments. Hybrid staffing models for rural emergency care can combine physicians and advanced practice providers in a flexible kind of physician or independent role to effectively staff low-volume rural clinics and hospitals. And lastly, specialized training programs like comprehensive advanced life support and rural trauma team development courses provide hands-on team-based training to help rural providers maintain essential emergency and trauma skills despite low patient volumes. And moving on from this area of research, we're going to touch on some of the community's perspectives and qualitative information that we incorporated into this report. We'll first touch on the interview findings. So for this component of the project, AgnuVec coordinated with project leads at the city to develop a contact list and interview questions. Interviews spanned 15 weeks of the project and included 16 individuals that represented healthcare providers, city staff, seafood industry representatives, tribal members, and community members in Unalaska. These discussions were centered on healthcare needs, service gaps, and opportunities, with additional questions that were tailored based on each person's connection to the community. And interview findings were grouped into categories about the constraints or limitations of the current healthcare system, what community priorities there were for healthcare in the future, and opportunities that individuals saw that could improve the healthcare landscape in their community. And while the report details this further, you can see high-level findings detailed here. And some of the key takeaways are that the current healthcare landscape and service population are not fully understood by community members, which has created confusion and at times eroded trust and is exacerbated by interpersonal relationships that have at times overshadowed institutional priorities. And there is confusion around the city's scope and involvement and level of support within this system. What came up frequently is that there was chronic staffing shortages and one of the most challenging and destabilizing components of the healthcare system, and that items or components like housing shortages and the geographic composition of island life and provider burnout makes this even more difficult. Interviewees highlighted that IFHS functions as the island's de facto emergency department, despite being funded only as a primary FQHC, which has created some structural and financial challenges. And lastly, the community does have a desire to strengthen kind of the city, clinic, and industry partnerships so that there's clear expectations for funding, roles, capacity in the future, and a collaborative approach to healthcare in the future. Shifting into the community gathering findings, we had the privilege of meeting with community members in Unalaska in March to share initial findings and gather feedback on the models of healthcare delivery that we identified in our research. We shared both our interview findings as well as those six models of successful healthcare delivery that we shared with you a few slides back. And we asked participants to share their thoughts and feedback about the feasibility of these models in Unalaska. Participants provided reactions and feedback to the models, which you can see shown in the photos on the left side of the screen here through voting and commenting. And on the right, you can see the voting criteria being recorded as to how people voted based on their reaction to those models. And then after kind of the initial voting and commenting period, we then have a large group discussion to better understand people's reactions and reasoning behind their votes and comments. And so just some high-level takeaways here. Participants expressed optimism and interest in a blended healthcare model approach that was centered on telehealth, workforce stabilization, fractional modeling, fractional staffing, and selective integration and partnerships. There was also a strong preference for any model delivery to have a complement to, but not replace, local emergency and core services, as folks appreciated the connection they had with providers and the clinic in the community.
Thanks, Riley. We're going to shift to kind of the big picture and zooming out a little bit from each of those components to the full picture of the project. This slide highlights key findings from across the different areas of data collection, interviews, the community gathering that Riley just mentioned, and then additional research that Agnew-Beck did along the way, as well as conversations that we've had with the city. And the big picture is that Unalaska has many strengths and resources to build upon, the many providers that are already within the community, the creative approaches that providers are already using to try to straddle the need for in-person care with the difficulty of hiring people locally or bringing people to move permanently. There's a lot of creativity that's already happening and that is working. And the stage is set for stronger collaboration and a desire for that among the healthcare stakeholders in the community, including industry leaders, the city, the providers themselves, and community members. Because delivering healthcare in Unalaska has a range of unique challenges due to your location as a community, the economic landscape with the seasonal fluctuations, and the community composition with a younger and more male population on average, this is delivering healthcare in Unalaska is unique and more challenging on average. And the number of variables that are impacting healthcare delivery in Unalaska are really challenging for any one provider to address alone. Chronic staffing shortages, like Riley mentioned, are the most pervasive and the most, what was worded as the most destabilizing challenge. And those are related to other aspects of living in Unalaska, housing shortages, the geographic isolation, burnout that comes from having fewer providers on average. The community input that we heard reflected a very strong desire for strengthening and stabilizing the existing services. And as Riley just referenced from that community gathering, there was energy around and interest in exploring several of those options with targeted investment and coordination. Community members would like to have more on-island access to specialty care, reliable emergency care, and expanded care hours. Generally, long-term sustainable healthcare in rural areas requires dedicated attention. It requires effort and creativity, and there are several models that can help. There's also a lot of creativity and experience already in Unalaska that can help adapt and take some of these models of integration or a more formal hub and spoke structure or technology-enabled care or fractional or shared staffing and apply those to Unalaska. And there was a lot of interest in blending an approach rather than selecting just one overall. The ingredient, though, that is essential to make any of these adaptations work is collaboration across partners. The remote location, the challenges with staffing, and the limited number of providers overall mean that really working together is an essential component for strengthening the system going forward. We structured our report with a lot more detail around the rationale for each of the two recommendations. You'll see kind of a high-level recommendation at the top of the slide, and then there are just two, and then another slide has a high-level recommendation. On the left-hand side are some specific strategies to implement that suggestion or that recommendation, and then the report documents in a lot more detail kind of the rationale for each of those. Our top-level recommendation, though, is that the city should really structure and standardize support for healthcare delivery in the community. which was a goal of this study, was understanding kind of if that was necessary and what that could look like. Kind of looking at the big picture, reliable baseline access to healthcare is essential to support the resident population and the industry workforce in Unalaska. And with the unique challenges in Unalaska, it's really challenging for an individual provider to resolve difficulties with healthcare delivery solo. So the city really could play a role in stewarding the healthcare system and holding a perspective that's broader than one clinic or provider alone. I did want to call out that we did hear very clearly that city EMS is doing a great job and that they're also stretched too thinly right now and really can't take on a more robust role in healthcare delivery. So really what we're recommending is that the city take on a more strategic and directive role and a financial and provide financial support when it is needed by providers. One of the strategies that we're suggesting is that that support be multi-year support rather than 1 year at a time support. It can be challenging for organizations to do long-term planning when that funding that they need to leverage or rely upon is not available kind of consistently. And part of one of our recommendations is also that the city kind of use the funding that they have available to leverage some additional kind of long-term planning among healthcare providers in the community. So using that funding to leverage and require community collaboration, strategic planning across agencies and workforce development planning, and potentially even workforce strategy implementation across or across entities. This second and final recommendation of this study is to establish, require, and participate in local partnerships. There are a couple of different levels at which we recommend that that happens. One is that with the two planned expansions across IFHS and APIA, and also with the challenges with staffing, that there be a formalized partnership to share, pool, and plan for resource sharing across those two entities. This was not explored in depth in this project, but it is a recommendation going forward. We're also recommending that healthcare providers in the city convene regularly, that building that understanding of the challenges and the swings in the seasonal population and just general relationships across those entities will be helpful going forward. And we're also recommending that the city really take the lead in driving planning across industry partners and healthcare providers to try to proactively plan for some of those seasonal swings. And then another element of the study that came out in the largely in the interviews and to a smaller degree in some of the focus group conversations were just the need to communicate what is available and the roles and responsibilities of different healthcare providers in the city to community members, and that proactive communication and outreach could really help reestablish and build trust within the community and set the stage for stronger partnerships going forward. One of the things that we touch on related to partnerships in the full report is that there are different levels and ways of collaboration. And really what we're suggesting is more than just the kind of minimum of cooperation and sort of informing one another of the work that we're doing and moving forward to a higher and more intensive levels of collaboration where there are agreements, where organizations and entities are solving problems together and meeting regularly to work through issues that arise. We just threw a lot of information at you, so we're going to pause and take any questions that you have. And like I said at the beginning, this report is currently in draft for review form, and so we'll be taking in all the comments and questions that you have today and incorporating them into the final report. With that, maybe I'll hand it off to Cameron, just in case you want anything that you want to add, and then we'll open it up to any questions.
Well, thank you for your report. Interesting facts come out. Any questions or comments? Councilman Chastain? Oh, you're done? Keep going? It's your comment before we ask questions? Oh, okay. Councilman Chastain,
Yeah, thank you for the report. I'm confused. I may have missed pieces of this report during the presentation, but how did you go from like telehealth and remote medicine and all that kind of stuff coming together to the city creating a new position at the cost of probably about $200,000 a year with a loaded wage, benefits and everything? How did you go from like telehealth, community medicine, community paramedicine, all that kind of stuff, to the city, the solution being the city effectively taking or leading the clinic and creating a new position? I'm confused. I missed that middle part.
No, that's a great question, and I'm glad that you asked that. We are, and that is not what we are advocating for, so thank you for bringing that up. The possibility of a position was floated in that final recommendation as that might be needed, but it was not a specific recommendation. So we can make sure that that is phrased more clearly in the final report. And the idea of having the recommendation around structuring and standardizing support for healthcare delivery is not that would happen at the expense or instead of any of the other rural healthcare models that were talked about and that there's interest in. There's just a balance between what the city is in control of versus what healthcare providers alone have the agency to do. And in this particular project, our client is you, the city, and not the providers directly. But we can certainly draw that out and make it more clear the models of rural healthcare delivery that were really recommended. But raising telehealth as an example would be a great way a great kind of leverage opportunity to include in any sort of funding that the city released or made available, for example. Does that help address some of the confusion, or are there still points that I'm missing?
No, not at all. So I'm looking at recommendation one right now, which is on the screen, and it says the city could consider establishing a full-time or part-time liaison position, which is in effect a $200,000 position with the loaded wage, benefits, salary, and everything. That's your number one recommendation. If you could go to the number two recommendation.
If I might just chime in here to say location on the side of the screen was not saying that that should happen, just that it could be considered as a way to implement this suggestion. That is not, but like I said at the start, that's not what we're recommending or advocating for sure. Just recognizing that any sort of stewardship support is additional job responsibilities, and so it may require additional staff time made available, but how this is actually implemented is totally up to the city to choose how to do. But we will make sure that that's more clear, that those items on the far right are more considerations for the city to consider in thinking about implementing the recommendation, not the formal recommendation itself. Apologies for the confusion there. But moving on to the next slide.
Yeah, I think that's as clear as mud. Okay, yeah, maybe it wasn't the slide that I was looking at, but the impression I had with what you were saying was you were recommending the city effectively lead the clinic. Was I off on that as well?
Yes, thank you for clarifying. No, that is not what we are suggesting at all. Rather, that the city has a role and could play a role in requiring and supporting coordination among healthcare entities in Unalaska. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Great questions. Thank you.
Any further questions? Healthcare? Councilman Tungo?
So are you aware that the city is already funding us a grant on a yearly basis?
Yes. The current funding request and previous the prior year's funding requests were shared with us for both APIA and IFHS.
But there's two separate ones that we dedicated for both sides. The after hours that we give away to the clinic.
Yes.
You're aware of that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we're aware of that ongoing funding request for the next fiscal year, as well as the two expansion potentials for both IFHS and APIA. There may be other things that we're missing, though, but we are aware of all of those elements.
Okay. Councilman Shostein?
This should be a little bit easier. And just for my own information and that of councils, you're going to be presenting us with a full report sometime in the future. This is just a high-level brief of the report.
We can come back and share more and certainly address any questions in more detail if that's desired. Our understanding, and Cameron, please feel free to step in, is that the final draft of the report is needed before the two decisions are going to be made about funding for the upcoming year. And this report in its entirety is in the packet for today. But if there's other questions that I'm missing, please ask them.
Yeah, you have the full report for your review in the packet for this meeting, and then we'll incorporate any council feedback in editing for the final. But the version in your packet is the complete report. It's the 50-odd pages in the meeting packet in addition to this presentation.
There's more in this report than what we're getting right now, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. Again, Councilman Shostein.
Oh, yeah. So we're not taking any action with the recommendations in this report, correct? Like, this isn't going to lead us into determining funding for the clinic or not determining funding for the clinic or APA. This is just an informational report that we are looking at, correct?
This was requested several months ago to get an update of where the clinic was at and what needs to be done to straighten them back on the path. But this is what this does here. Go ahead, Cameron.
Sure. So this study was done in response to a council directive to look at healthcare in Alaska broadly with a focus on sustainability. And I think that was done in part to inform your decisions about community support grants, about land requests for APIA's new facility. We're not requesting action on this. It's for to help frame those conversations looking at healthcare more broadly in the community.
Sure, we'll have more. So read the report. Any further questions? Thanks. You want to continue, or is that it? Is that your report for this evening?
Thank you. No, this was the end of our report for this evening, but I do want to echo and just repeat, thank you for the comments and questions. They're great clarifications. I do see one person raising their hand. I don't know if that's in response to this presentation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your report.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. There's someone who has raised her hand. I have Ms. Jessica Matarukov-Vishnikov.
Thank you, Madam Clerk, Mr. Mayor, Council. I just had a process question. So this is in draft form. Jessica Matarukov-Vishnikov, Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, Director of Primary Care and Environmental Services. I had a process question. So what are the next steps?
Thanks, Jessica. That's a great question. I'll speak to what AgNewBeck's next steps are, and then if there are more that come after that, can just let other folks chime in on that. For our part, well, first, Jessica, thank you for your participation in this process. Second, we'll be taking any additional feedback that comes after this meeting and working it into the final report and sending a final report back. It will be largely the same for what you've seen tonight. It will just have some clarifications based on the questions here this evening. And then from our work and contract with the city ends in May, we're happy to answer questions or respond to any other issues that come up. going forward, but our project role will end once we incorporate the additional feedback.
That's great. And then I think just for everybody in the room, your page number 10, thank you for sharing that, successful models of rural healthcare delivery. You did mention the hub and spoke. You mentioned hub and spoke, sorry. You mentioned South Central Foundation, but I want to mention that APIA is already doing pretty much everything on that slide. We have built Unalaska into a support system for our smaller villages that all travel through there. I have doctor lessons on the ground there right now, ready to go out to see his patients. We participate in workforce recruitment and retention, and probably one of our shining stars is our telehealth and technology-enabled care, where we actually had a patient have his cardiology visit out in the village without having to come in to Anchorage. Thank you.
Any further comments online or Zoom?
No, sir, none.
No written comments. Okay. Anyone present wish to speak? And okay, thank you. That finishes the Unalaska Healthcare Planning Assessment. Thank you very much for your report. Next item is the report on assessment updates. I'll turn this over to City Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tonight we have on the line with us our representative for our assessment firm that provides services to us, Michael Renfro, and he will give you a brief update on the property assessments. And the results of that from 26 that will take effect for the 27 tax year.
Is he on?
Yes, sir. Yes, he is. Go ahead, Mr. Renfro.
You may need to unmute yourself.
Just some technical difficulties, Mayor. Could I maybe ask for a little break for a little bit, please? 5-minute break, Mayor, for some.
Okay. Well, we're requesting a 5-minute break, so we'll 5-minute break as we find out what's going on with our presenter. Okay, 5 minutes, 7:20, 7:15, back here at 7:20. Thank you.
Mr. Renfro, can you do a mic check now? We can't hear you, Mr. Renfro. We can see you.
You may need to select your audio source in the top right by the microphone. There's a little arrow that you can drop down and pick your microphone source.
Hello, Mr. Renfro. Can you hear us okay?
Can you hear me now?
We can. You're going to need to mute your speakers on your computer.
Okay. Do you hear me on my computer or on the phone?
We hear you on the phone, but you need to mute your microphone and on your computer.
Oh, I just muted the computer.
Turn down your computer speakers.
30 seconds, we'll get back to order, please.
Okay, I turned down the computer.
Now there's no more feedback, and we can hear you just fine, sir. Thank you.
Okay, you can hear me fine now?
We can. We'll let you know when to proceed in just a moment. The mayor's getting ready to call the meeting back to order.
I apologize for the technical difficulties.
Ready. Call back to order. 7:22. We'll turn this over to city manager for introduction.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we have the technical difficulties fixed, and Mr. Renfro is online to give us an update.
Good evening. My name is Mike Renfro. I'm one of the assessors and the owner of Appraisal Company of Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you tonight. The overview prepared by Martins Onkoulis will just generally talk about the real estate market, which has generally been the same for the last couple of years. We'll talk about our 2026 updates, and we'll give a short explanation of the effect on income by changing the mill rate. Market conditions are generally the same as they've been for the last couple of years. We have a low inventory of housing, and overall property values appear to be increasing, and we determine this with our sales ratio study, which is a relationship between the sale price and the assessed value of homes. Through the last, this last year, we've seen an increase of approximately 6%, 4 to 6% arranged through the market, but 6% an increase in values over the last year. What's driving the market? Market influencing factors are supply and demand. As we, as I previously stated, the overall inventory levels have remained rather low, and it's a supply and demand issue with limited supply and a higher demand, prices tend to go up. Some of the factors that have been influencing the market this last year is higher interest rates, which cause higher borrowing costs, which limits the affordability of people to buy homes. And that tends to slow the market a little bit. Another thing that's consistent throughout the state and all the communities that we work in is new construction costs remain expensive and are continuing to increase. Other factors influencing the market are the availability of vacant land and the cost of developing those lots, and other considerations that Martins looked into are seasonal timing, the limit on the season for building, personnel, personal circumstances, and individual motivations within the market. A lot of the things that we've discussed are the high interest rates, supply and demand, high construction costs, and the availability of land are the factors that that are influencing the market. The real estate market in Onalaska, we had 28 confirmed residential sales between 23 and 25. Seems to be pretty consistent. It's interesting to note that none of the sale prices were below our assessed value. The interesting thing is, on average, between 2023 and 2025, there's approximately a 17% increase in the average sale price. On our 2026 values, breaking down all of the sales, we can see that the Martins broke down the market into low value, mid-range, 300,000 to 450,000, upper mid 450,000 to 550,000, and high value, and then looked at where the sale prices fell in relation to the assessed values. And his analysis is that a recommendation that we raise the assessed values on low value homes, low 300,000, by 15%, mid-range increase by 8%, and the upper mid-range 450 to 550 by 3%. The high value homes, there's recommendation that we do not increase the assessed value. It should be noted that after we made the changes to the assessed values this year, that the state assessor recommends that the assessed values levels should be between 90 and 110%. Our current level of assessment is 89.3. Prior to our adjustments from the 2024 roll, or 2024 roll was 84%, was prior to that. Now, with our changes, we're up to 89.3, which is close to the bottom end of the recommended range by the state assessor. In addition to the information from the current sales and our level of assessment, Martin's put together a mill rate study to determine the effect of changing the mill rate and how it affects the property owners and the commercial owners in Onalaska. There are a total of 365 taxable properties within the city, and the average taxable value on residential, or 365 residential properties, excuse me, and the average assessed value is $327,000. Industrial properties, there's 222, and the average taxable value is $1,870,500. At the current mill rate, the current mill rate is 10.5. And I'd like to point out that the current mill rate compared to the cities that have real property taxes within the state, the 10.5 is right in the middle of the range for all properties within the state. There are some that are quite a bit higher, some that are lower, but the 10.5 is right in the middle of the range. So in the mill rate study, if you lower the mill rate, what's the overall effect going to be on the average residential property owner? And the average effect of the 1.5 mil lowering it is going to save the average residential property owner $163.50 a year. The average industrial property owner is going to save $935 a year. Martins and I have looked at cities and proper the communities throughout the state with higher proportion of commercial industrial properties. Most of them maintain a higher mill rate, and they explore optional exemptions for their residential property owners to balance the tax burden. They can do this by homeowner exemptions, which is the primary method that the communities have been using to do that. Martin's also put in here that he had the state assessor presentation on mill rates, but we don't have that for you this evening. It's short and brief. We've got a limited market.
We have property values on general are increasing, and this is a trend that's happening throughout the state of Alaska and all of the communities that we're in. We're not seeing the high increase in property values that we saw during the pandemic. It appears that the market is slowing a little bit, but there is still an increase in property values. Are there any questions?
All right. Do we have any questions at this time before we continue? None here. We could keep going.
Mr. Mayor, I believe that was the end of the presentation. Michael, did you have anything else to present to the council? It looks like they didn't have any questions for you.
No, I don't have any other information to present tonight. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
Well, thank you for the assessment process and adjustments you made. Any further questions before we let them go? Okay. Does anyone present wish to speak? Anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir. No one need an indication.
Okay, that takes care of report B assessment on updates, and thank you very much for your update. Next item is a presentation. Understanding full fund balance and why it's growing and what's available to appropriate. Turn this over to the city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have the finance director here with us tonight as well, and we're going to kind of tag team this presentation for you. We're going to attempt to answer a couple questions that council has brought up at different times through budget discussions, budget amendment discussions, and as we've been working through this year's budget. We'll just give the clerk a second to pull that up for us. Next slide, please. So the question is why we're here today, and we have really, as I mentioned, two questions that we want to talk about that council's been asking. Why does our fund balance continue to grow over time, and is this reflecting an over-budgeting on the part of the city, is the first question. And then the second question being that council has asked for a clear picture of what you have available to spend, for example, when we bring forward a budget amendment. Can we afford to do this? And so we're going to attempt to answer those two questions for you. And I've kind of explained that more in the bullets there. But we've broken this presentation into two parts. The first part, we'll attempt to answer the question about the fund balance, why it's growing, and what factors are contributing to that. And then we'll pause and we'll go on to the second question. So next slide. So first question, understanding our fund balance. We're going to talk about that now, and the finance director is going to help explain some terminology for you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Within your slide deck is a definition. This is more of an accounting definition of fund balance. I know Councilmember Luby and I have had this discussion in the past in terms of what each interpretation of fund balance truly is. And when we went through this process, and what I was trying to convey to council previously was what was available ultimately to appropriate, and we would talk about it fund balance. And within the accounting world, fund balance, for lack of a better term, is the equity within the city's general fund and governmental funds in total. And there are various reductions and exclusions for what they call assigned or for committed or restricted. And then what's left is unassigned, which is truly what should be available to council for their use. And what it doesn't include specifically is the rainy day fund. I know that's been a topic. The council has talked about this in years past. and accounting principles change over time. And so what had been withheld previously or shown as an exclusionary item or set aside as emergency operations no longer meets the definition or the requirement to be reduced. And so therefore, when we look at what they call the unassigned fund balance, it is artificially inflated by that $25 million that council has set aside through a resolution in years past. And our goal in going through this process was to take into account what we have to set aside based on generally accepted accounting principles, but also set aside for various items, specifically as in this case, as it relates to the rainy day fund. And I'm going to pause here and see if folks have any questions about the unassigned fund balance and the methodology and how that number comes about.
I'm going to thank you, Jim. Any questions at this point?
Okay. And then I think I'll turn it back over to the city manager.
So on this slide, we've taken that unassigned fund balance and we're showing end of year unassigned fund balance, and we're showing that to you so that you can see how it's grown over the past 10 years, or changed, I should say, over the past 10 years. I will make one note, as Jim mentioned, the rainy day fund starting in 2023, according to the GAAP principles, is no longer, it doesn't meet the GAAP definition to show on the financial statements any longer. And so when you look at today's financial statement, it will show $25 million more than what you're seeing on the screen right there for 2025. And that's the case for 2023, 2024, and 2025. Prior to that, it did meet that definition, and so it was already reduced on these amounts. And so in order to show you apples to apples, we went ahead and removed it in this case on those 3 years. So this is how the fund balance has changed over the past 10 years. A couple of things to note for you. And I think this is a good place as any to do it. There was some changes in 2020. Obviously, we had COVID, and then we saw start to decrease in our balance from there going forward for a couple of years. And then it took about 4 years before we got to the point that we're at now. In there also, for all of these years, our mill rate was 10.5, except for in 2023. And in 2023 is the year that the property taxes, the values of the properties increased significantly, and the council lowered the mill rate to, I believe it was 9. And then in 2024, the mill rate was raised again back to 10.5. So that's what our fund balance has looked like over the past several years. Move on to the next slide. So you did see growth there, and so this slide is going to attempt to show you what factors have influenced the growth in the past, say, 4 years of that fund balance. So it's a very busy slide, and I apologize for that. You have two components here. You have the shaded area in the background, or the landscape of this slide, and that represents our revenues. And as you walk through those revenues from bottom to top, the dark blue area at the bottom is our taxes. The green area just above that is the intergovernmental revenue. And those are both pretty stable from year to year, as you can see. We know what those amounts are going to bring in generally, and we kind of live, for the most part, in that range. As you continue up the chart, you have then charges for services, which is the orange line, and you have other revenues, which is the blue line, the light blue line, excuse me. And I will note the last one is the red, and that's investment income. On 2022, as you can tell, that's a very volatile amount. It changes quite a bit. And in fact, in 2022, that's reflecting a negative amount for our investment income. And so you see the orange line and the light blue line disappear, and it goes all the way down into our green line. And that's what that's showing there. The other portion of this chart then shows you the revenues overlaid on top of the expenses overlaid on top of those revenues. And from bottom to top, again, you have the dark green, which represents our personnel costs, the orange, which is our school funding, And those are kind of our largest two combined that are driven by a formula, generally speaking, and we don't have a whole lot of control that we can do to those two items. Next, you have your operating expenses. It's also a fairly large contributor to our overall budget. That area, arguably, we do have a little bit more control over. There's no formula that requires what we set in that amount. However, any changes that we make there typically will directly impact the services we provide, the level of service that we provide. Continuing up the line, the next item in light blue is the community support grants, a relatively small portion of our budget. And then the last, the pink, is our capital outlay and transfers to other accounts, to other funds, transfers out. So you can see from that pink line, our capital projects and that contribution varies quite a bit from year to year. Some years it's a lot more than others, but that balance in between generally helps account for that and levels out our balance over time. You can probably also tell from that we, as we've talked about, we have some deferred maintenance that's happened, and that's also related to the amount of capital outlay that we've had. And with that, let's see. Let's look at my notes here and see if I had anything else I wanted to point out. Jim, is there anything you wanted to point out to them while I'm looking at these?
Sure. With respect to the capital outlay and the transfers out, that's that pink line. I do think it's important to note that when the city budgets for capital projects through the CMMP process, those are represented as transfers to our capital projects fund, whether it's a governmental capital project or whether the general fund is funding a project in an enterprise fund. So the reason why the capital outlay and the transfers out are net together or included here together is the feeling is they more or less represent what we spend or fund in any given year for a capital item.
So the only other note that I see in my notes that I had is that I'll note in 2025, there was fisheries disaster relief, which was an additional $3.7 million, and that is part of that green section, the intergovernmental revenue. I think we should pause here and see if council has any questions on this slide, because there's a lot of information there.
Any questions for Jim or Abner right now? Still going through it. Yeah, we'll give you a lot of time. You got to watch this T-shirt there. All good.
While you're thinking about if you have any questions on this, I'll note the finance director and I have talked about what we would like to do for you if you think this chart is useful and kind of makes sense. What we'd like to do is carry it beyond for you with projections, what the forecast looks like based on the current year budget and what we're forecasting for the FY27 budget. And then I think that would help give you a clearer picture of what's happening going forward. Potentially, we could even stretch that out additional years if we wanted to. But if you think that would be useful, we'd be happy to bring that back in future budget discussions as appropriate.
Okay. Part two.
We can continue if there's no other questions. So next slide. On this slide, you see that's very similar to two slides ago. And this is our fund balance over time. I intended to put these two slides ago and this one together so that you could see it more clearly, and I ran out of time. But what I can tell you about this is that investment income, we believe for a large part, is a large part of the reason that our fund balance is growing over time. So what we did on this slide is we removed not only the rainy day fund like we did on the previous slide, but also the cumulative effect of that investment income. And it's a little hard to see because the scale changes. But those bars they're a little bit flatter. It's not quite as steep a growth these last 4 years on this slide versus, if you can quickly jump back two slides. So that's that climb is much steeper when you have the investment income in there. And then you go back forward again, two slides. Again, it's a little hard to see. I apologize for that. But that's what we were trying to show on this slide here.
I think what I would add to that, when we were looking at the landscape multicolored graph, you could really see at the last couple of years, the investment income has been $9 million and then $10 million. And you certainly see it in this graph too, where in the first graph, we can see that it really goes up. When you do the math and you compare the initial slide that had the $97 million versus this next slide where it shows $63 million, that difference of $34 million represents the amount of fund growth, fund balance growth we have been able to realize just out of investment income in the last 10 years. So that's a fairly substantial amount of money, but it doesn't necessarily represent the city's operations. And that was the thought process that we had in terms of carving that out a bit. And the other component of that we really haven't touched on here, we'll get into it in a little bit, is the creation of the sustainability fund and moving $50 million from the general fund out. That will further impact this, you know, what we have available. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Abner.
Okay. I think there's questions.
Yes, go ahead.
So on this slide here, this does not have investment or the balance of the rainy day fund in these bars?
That's correct. Bars have both of those items removed.
And we still have a pretty steady growth upward, but not as much. And
it's not as robust.
Right.
But it's certainly, the city's not hurting.
Right.
I mean, let's be clear about that. But it's certainly, as Abner was referring to, it does flatten it out a bit where this is trying to tell a tale more related to the city's core operations and the services the city provides and carving out that investment income that really is so volatile from year to year.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really count on it. It's great when it's up, but it isn't a sustainable.
And it doesn't always represent actual cash to the city, dependent upon the types of investment income that are included in that amount.
Mm-hmm. I guess just seeing that there's still a growth, that's important, you know, that you take those big bulk numbers out, but you still have the growth. So that's a good thing, I guess.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Next slide, please. So the key takeaways from this part one discussion, taxes and our governmental revenues are generally aligned, we feel, with our current operations. They're stable and they help support our ongoing services. Really, the primary driver of the fund balance growth has been in large part due to the investment income. Our personnel and school funding make up the largest share of the expenses. Both of those are pretty much formula driven and policy driven. We have very limited discretion there. So those expenses are going to continue to grow in a predictable way. We have some deferred maintenance and timing of capital projects, which also temporarily increases the fund balance or decreases the fund balance as those projects are executed. And then the long-term trend here reflects the structural factors and investment volatility, not necessarily and systemic over-budgeting. And we'll pause for just one more second to see if there's any additional questions on the fund balance growth. Oh, yes, you are missing that page because I decided it would be useful to put it in. We'll have the clerk publish that with the minutes. That's why you can't find it. I apologize. I meant to note that.
Any questions? Okay, go ahead.
And Jim, if you want to take this one, I believe is what we decided.
Yes, sir. This is the fun part for me. This is where I get to do the nerdy math stuff and then try to explain it. our interpretation, Adam and I talked through this quite a bit, and our interpretation of the questions that council has been asking is really more along the lines of when we're presented with an opportunity for a budget amendment, do we have the resources available to meet that? And I've tried a few different ways, and we determined that those probably aren't really doing the job. And so Abner and I can put our heads together and work through this a little bit more thoughtfully and with the goal in mind to provide an actual number for council, not just for the general fund, but for the governmental funds, which includes the 1% sales tax fund, and then also for each of the enterprise funds. And that's what this exercise is all about. And rather than use the term fund balance, simply because to me, again, nerdy accountant, fund balance is a technical accounting term, and that's not really what we're trying to do here. We're trying to provide an answer to council in terms of what is available to appropriate. So we came up with something a little bit more simple. And it is clear to say this is not a generally accepted accounting principle term. This is an Abner and Jim management term that we think will benefit council. And we do believe, you know, we do believe it to be a management tool that will help you and assist you in that process of making decisions at a council level. Ms. Garland, if you can skip over the next slide and go to the one where I have the fancy Excel workbook spreadsheet. And I'm going to walk, yes, that was the one. So I'm going to walk through the steps. You do have this in your packet, but I wanted to walk through the steps of the calculation as you have the information in front of you. And Abner and I spoke a little bit about fund balance and how we came up to the unassigned fund balance. And that was somewhat of a lead into this. And the information at the very top down to where it says the governmental funds unassigned fund balance of $122 million, that information from there above is straight information right out of our financial statements, our annual comprehensive financial report as of June 30, 2025. If you were to look at, and I actually brought the pages. And I've boxed it in so you can see where those numbers come from. Hopefully that'll provide, you know, a little bit of additional color. And so the, in spite of the t-shirt I'm wearing, you can see that I'm not making this up. So you start with the total fund balance or net position. And with respect to this handout that you just received, if you look at the lower right-hand corner in the green box, $156 million, that's the top number in the formula. And then there's certain reductions that are included. And all of this information is here. I'm just walking you through so that you can see where I get the information. And then the governmental funds unassigned balance is $122 million. And the way the accounting principles work, that also matches what's in the general fund. And without going into a lot of detail, it's simply because the general fund is the only fund, according to GAAP, that can have a positive unassigned fund balance. From there, we make adjustments based on what's contained in those funds, specifically two adjustments, one being that we're adding back in what's available from the 1% sales tax fund, which you will see is $17,210,381. We add that back in. We want to, even though it doesn't reflect within the financial statements, we want to honor council set aside and show the $25 million as a rainy day fund or emergency operations as unavailable for appropriation because it is really set aside for something regardless of how it's presented or not presented in our annual financial statements. If you just stop there, that's what would give us whatever that was available as of the end of June for governmental funds. But because we're now three quarters of the way through the fiscal year and we've made some adjustments, council's made some decisions that impact this, there are some additional items that impact it. First being, we established the sustainability fund. That was funded from the general fund, so that is no longer available to appropriate from the general fund. And you, so you can see that as a reduction. The next section is appropriated fund balance from the originally adopted budgets for fiscal year 2026. You have an amount for the general fund, you have an amount for the 1% sales tax fund, and to be clear, the general fund budgeted deficit is related to capital projects, because we always do, you know, part of the council goals, and we do honor that, is to ensure that from an operating perspective, we present, we do not present a deficit budget. Following that, we want to acknowledge that there have been some budget amendments during the year that have appropriated fund balance. Those are now also no longer available, which gets us down to the amount available to appropriate for governmental funds of $43 million and change, almost $44 million. But it isn't, we also want to give credit or make available the 1% sales tax fund, because those monies are available. They do have strings attached in the sense that they're for capital projects only. And if there's a capital project that is placed, you know, where there could be a budget amendment, we want council to understand and know that there are some funds available that are specifically for that, whereas the general fund dollars are unrestricted. I'm going to stop and see what questions council may have. Part of what I'm looking for is, one, I want to make sure that you understand it. And if, you know, if you have questions, I'll be able to respond as best I can. But I think one of the key takeaways for me that would really mean a lot to me is this helpful? And I was really hoping that Councilmember Coleman would be here tonight. She's also been a strong advocate for getting this type of information. Unfortunately, she isn't here. So it's incumbent on the remainder of you four to pick up the slack, because she is not here. So I do expect questions.
Councilman Louie.
Yeah, I have to say, this is exactly what I've been looking for.
Sweet.
100%. And I understand exactly everything you did, and that's exactly how I would do it. And I understand it's not part of governmental accounting, but
we're flexible.
Yeah. You know? So, and this is something that I've been looking for the last 4 years. So I say thank you very much, and I appreciate it. And it will be very helpful to me. I believe it will also be helpful to Ms. Coleman as well. So you might have to explain, go through it with her on how you came to the numbers and stuff, but sure. It's pretty easy to, you know, to follow what you did. So I think this is really great. So, and I appreciate it a lot. So thank you very much. And sure. I look forward to having it with our financial statements.
Follow it. Okay, thanks. Any further questions? Confused. Mr. Bell?
Either I'm going way off in the weeds here, or maybe I'm not understanding the question here. But so let's go to one of the electric power, or electric fund, right?
Yes.
And we're going to fund a project out of that.
Yes. This is of no help to you.
Okay.
So far.
Okay.
But wait, there's more.
But
just not yet.
Okay. All right. But it does help in the fact that we say, oh, hey, we don't have, you know, we're going to do a $9 million project. We only got $6 million in that fund, right? We say, oh, hey, we got $28 million in the general fund. There. That gives us a dollar amount at least to look at.
Exactly.
So thank you.
And it doesn't help so far, but we walked through this methodology just using the general fund. In a minute, we're going to show you what that means on all of the enterprise funds
else.
As well. I did want to note before we leave this slide, though, because I asked the question, all of these budget amendments are negative numbers, even though we've taken in revenues. These are the net change to the general fund and not the individual amounts. So I just wanted to point
out. When you look at a budget amendment, there's always a line item that specifically labeled appropriated use of net fund balance or net position. That's what the number up there represents for the general fund. So as Abner mentioned, there could be some revenue in there as well, but this is the net amount that was appropriated as part of a budget amendment.
Okay, thanks. Did you?
Thank you, sir.
Next slide.
So, Mr. Bell, this is the slide that you were looking for. This presents all of the, this is a snapshot that is current. I will admit it is in a chart form, which it could be a little bit more challenging to read. But you can also see the numbers at the bottom, and hopefully you do have this slide deck in your packet. You can see the general fund, the 1% sales tax fund on the left. Those are the two most robust funds available. And then they move from left to right after that for the utilities, ports, airport, and housing. So, Mr. Bell, your question, if it was electric, you would see that you have about $10 million available. If my vision is good from here, $10,921,000. So your $9 million project, yes, you can fund it. The goal here isn't to present you this bar chart or to present that rather bulky Excel workbook every time. The goal is to distill this information down into a line form where you can see general fund 1% in the amount available. If council would prefer to see the more robust calculation from the previous tab or previous slide, I do have that available. I did that for every one of them. And really at this point, it's more a matter of what is council's wishes. Do you want to see just the fund and the amount? Do you want to see the calculation? How frequently do you want it? You know, truth be told, that information we will update at the beginning of the new fiscal year based on preliminary information. We will update it again when our final financial report is issued, and then we will update it as budget amendments are adopted and there is a change. That's really the best way that I can describe it. I'm more than happy to provide this on a monthly basis as part of the financials, just so that you have it to look at. If you would prefer to only see it when a budget amendment is presented to you, that's certainly an option as well. If you only want to see it once a year, okay. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but my point in saying all of that is when we first started this process, we were concerned about how daunting it may be to do this and keep it up, but it really isn't that big of a deal. You can see there's a bunch of numbers that go in there, but for the most part, the bottom half is all that really gets updated on a semi-regular basis, and it's only when there are trigger events that require it.
Councilman Luby?
Yeah, you know, unless it's going to really change, it'll change as we take in revenue, I guess, over the year, throughout the periods, but the information for us probably is more needed when we're doing a budget amendment or if we need to make a decision that we want to spend money. It's kind of nice to, kind of be reminded, I guess, maybe quarterly or something. Or I don't want to make a bunch of extra work for you all the time.
It isn't necessary. A lot of extra work, to be honest with you. It really is a matter of just updating a couple of numbers in the workbook and printing it the PDF and putting it in the packet. Our role here is to help you make the decisions as best you can. And personally, I think at the very least, you should have it in front of you when you are contemplating a budget amendment. Mm-hmm. That does require appropriation of fund balance or net position. That's why you don't see one in there for tonight, because the budget amendment that's in there tonight doesn't require that. But as I've been putting in the cash balances, I can continue to do that and then also include this. Again, it's not going to change very much, but it might provide some peace of mind to council if they have it every month. But whatever works best.
If it's not a lot of extra work for you, we could start with, however you think best. And if we need to adjust from there, we can, okay, can do that. I mean, that's how I feel. I don't know about other council members.
Yeah, I think if it's not too much work on a monthly financial report, I think it would be nice to see that in there.
Okay. I really don't think it's too much of a burden.
That will be great. Thank you.
And I think I have one slide left. I think we've delivered the punchline for the most part. But at the end of the day, this is something that we were interpreting council's wishes. We do feel that it provides a clear and consistent calculation that will assist council in making their important decisions. And it at least for me, again, being the nerdy accountant guy, removes the confusion between gap use of fund balance and truly what we're after is what can we appropriate. I think this addresses that. It also at the same time acknowledges that there are certain amounts that either have been legally removed or have been assigned for different purposes, or in the case of the rainy day funds, were set aside by council, but the financial statements don't reflect it. And it truly, this isn't a policy. This is really more just an aid for council. And that is our goal, to help you make better decisions, have better information so you can make better decisions. And with that, I will wrap up what I have. I don't know if city manager has anything, but again, if council has any additional questions or guidance, feel free.
Just that, if there's any additional questions, we're happy to answer them. That's all we have on this presentation.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Councilman Shasteen, then Bill.
I just have one real quick. I really appreciate you guys working on this and putting it together. I think what it does is it creates that transparency that the community really needs and puts our financials in a readable format where a layperson can see them and easily understand what we're doing as a council and what the city is doing as a whole. So thank you. I really commend you guys for doing this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, my comments are along the same way or along the same lines as, you know, every year two seats come up for, you know, for election, and that so we can get multiple turnover in years. And having new council members come in and being able to get up speed with what, you know, governmental accounting is not that hard, but it's not the easiest thing in the world, right? And so being able to.
It's really hard.
Anyways, being able to understand it, even for a new council member, I mean, the main role of council really is to hold the purse strings here and, you know, be stewards of, you know, the public's money. So making it easier to understand some of this stuff is great, and I appreciate the work. Thank you.
Yeah, Councilman Coleman's out, and she's pretty involved with discussion regarding this particular issue. So. Hopefully you can have a class one-on-one with her before we have our next meeting. Thanks. Any questions or comments? Councilman Tungo.
Thank you for the presentation. I think this will kind of shorten up some of our meetings when we go with the budgeting process and when you present your financial report. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you, Chip. Thank you, Abner. A lot of good information. We'll move on it. Yeah, next item is the, does anyone present wish to speak? See public comment? Anybody on Zoom or helpful?
No, sir. No one has any questions.
Okay, thank you. We're still in work session. Next item D, present proposed FY27 departmental operating budget, non-personnel operating expenses. Turns over to city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mayor. The finance director and I are going to team up on this again, and we have some slides for you. I don't believe we included these in your packet. So we will provide them after. But they are up on the screen. So as we move into next slide when we're ready. Greg, can you drag that off here?
It just had two.
Okay. So we're talking about the operating budget, and we're talking about the non-personnel operating expenses. And so we'll start with talking about the budget direction and assumptions that we utilized in preparing this. We utilized the council's adopted budget goals to maintain our balanced general fund with no deficit. We wanted enterprise funds budgeted to operate at break even where possible. We wanted any non-personnel increases above 3% to require justification and an operational need or service quality. and then any one-time non-capital needs can be requested where appropriate. Next slide. So as staff went into this, the approach that we took was to evaluate historical spending, ensure that we have accurate, defensible, non-personnel budget. We wanted to ensure that departments can maintain their current service levels with no changes, positive or negative. We wanted to increase our focus on asset stewardship and deferred maintenance, consistent with the council discussions that we've had. And we made a decision to present our non-personnel budget separately from personnel, just to allow for a little more clarity and less muddy water as we went through this. What you'll find in the non-personnel operating budget for key results is that our general fund non-personnel operating budget overall did increase by 9.5% from FY26. However, that increase is driven primarily by two maintenance-related line items, one in streets and roads and one in facilities maintenance. Those are related to the road drainage and paving study and the facilities maintenance efforts that have been outlined during the capital and major maintenance program presentations for painting, other building maintenance, some roof maintenance, those sorts of items. Slide. When you look at the non-personal operating expenditures that are presented in this budget, what you'll see from FY26 to FY27, and this chart shows, is that the share by department is relatively stable. You do see a growth in public works in as a percentage of that total budget, and that's, again, related to those two maintenance items. Overall, other than that, across the board, you pretty much see a reduction, or in one case like the PCR, you have a small increase, and that's related to the feasibility study for the Aquatic Center. Talked about the maintenance related items, and we wanted to show the impact that has on our budget this year. As you can see there, the blue line is FY26 appropriated amount related to these same items, and in FY27 we've increased it significantly. We went from $1.1 million to $2.9 million towards maintenance, taking care of the things that we currently have. This slide shows you a comparison for general government and all the departments. And as you can see, going across from left to right, you have mayor and council, city manager's office, admin, clerks. But the point is, what you see is a decrease in general across almost all departments. You see a couple of slight increases, one in information systems, one in PCR. And then you see a large increase in public works, again, related to those maintenance line items in public works and not broad operational growth for public works. In PCR, that increase is related, again, to the Aquatic Center study. And in IS, the change you see is due to the pricing on some of the systems that we use to gather data and and then planning has a decrease related to one-time expenses in 2026 that aren't carrying forward into 2027. If you want to go to the next slide. So we took that same chart and then removed those maintenance-related items. And so you can see once we remove or discount those maintenance-related items, we even had a decrease in budget in public works, if not for them. And across the board, that's nearly a 10% reduction in our operating budget. Move on to enterprise funds. So again, in enterprise funds, similar story. We have mostly across the board decreases between FY26 and FY27. These reflect historical spending and not across-the-board cuts or increases. It's operational right-sizing of our budgets. You do see there that the airport fund does increase, and that's related to the terminal feasibility study. And And I'll turn it over to the finance director to talk about department level highlights.
Well, the city manager stole most of my thunder, but I'll go ahead and I do have some additional comments here. Just to highlight facilities maintenance, Abner did touch on that. But just to give you an idea, we went from $475,000 budget in FY26 to $1.9 million in 27. Streets and roads for engineering and architectural services, we went from $50,000 to $500,000. Again, these are, in theory, one-time increases. The planning decrease was related to the funding of the comp study in 26. That obviously will not happen again in 27. The comp study isn't complete, but the money's been encumbered, so there's no need to rebudget it for the coming year. The pool or the PCR, it does talk about the increase is related to the feasibility study for the aquatic center, and then the airport fund, $350,000 for terminal feasibility study. I do have a couple of other items, and Adler did touch on them a little bit. With respect to IS, one of the fastest growing line items within that budget has to do with software and hardware. And more it seems that we are unable to purchase on-premise software requiring a subscription of some sort. We do have some, and you know, given the remote nature of where we're at, it is a bit more of a struggle to have cloud-based systems. But there's a continual need for new software systems, and that's what this is. I mean, what we're showing is a 20% increase in that one specific line item. On the positive side, each year, probably starting in January, staff starts working with Marsh McLennan, who's our insurance broker, to determine what our liability insurance rates will look like in the coming fiscal year. So in other words, they started in January of 2026 for fiscal year 2027 rates. And based on the information that we currently have, we're expecting a reduction in our insurance rates for liability insurance of about 7.5%. So that's a positive. The other comment I wanted to make is really along the lines of travel. As you look through the more detailed line items within the budget, you'll see that for the most part, most departments show an increase in travel and travel-related costs. That isn't necessarily because staff is traveling more. It has everything to do with the cost of travel going up. It's more expensive to get on off the island. It's more expensive to rent a hotel room. Per diem rates go up. It's really just kind of snowballs to a certain degree. And so those are the main items that I really wanted to touch on with respect to the departmental level highlights. And then as Abner mentioned, when council meets next on the 28th, we will have a full budget for you with respect to all of the operating costs. And I know that we're still working on some of the revenue items. They're evaluating the rate study from last year that relates to some of the utilities. And so the goal is to have revenue available for you at that meeting as well. But just please understand we're still working through some of those items. And the other important components showing up on the screen, at the next meeting we'll have the CMMP that will be adopted, school support, and the community support grant program. And then I'm not sure that I see it on here, but I believe also on the 28th, Council will adopt a mill rate, which will certainly impact some of the revenue side, should there be a change. And with that, I will open it up with any questions that council may have.
Thanks, Jim. Any? Councilman Shastin?
I have a question and a statement. In your knowledge, Jim, has the city ever, the operating budgets for the city ever decreased this much ever in one budget year?
It's really difficult to assess that simply because we're taking a different approach this year.
I mean, numerically, I'm not talking about the realistic approach or whatever the term was you guys used. I mean, numerically, have we ever reduced the operating budget by this amount?
I would say no. Based on my experience, I do recall it was probably 2021, 2022. One of the council directives or goals was to, as best we could, hold our entire operating budget at no gain. And so in theory, when you have a 3-5% increase on the personnel costs, and you're going to hold your budget consistent in totality, you're reducing your non-personal operating costs by a similar amount. And actually, in reality, when we were showing you the slide earlier, if you think of personnel versus non-personnel costs in terms of the percentage of our budget, while you didn't see it in the slides up there, I want to say that personnel costs are 60% roughly of our costs.
I'm just talking.
I understand what you're saying. My point is this: if you have 40% of your operating budget is non-personnel, and you've got to hold everything the same, and you know that your biggest chunk of your budget is going to go up 6%, you've got to lower the non-operating by more than 6% because you got a smaller dollar amount to make up that difference. Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that question specifically because we are tackling it different this year than how we have in the past. But I would, if I had to say, it's probably as much or more than what we did in 2021, 2022, where we were directed to have a budget that showed a 0% increase from one year to the next.
But we're not talking about a 0% increase, effectively. Like, you take those two larger items, we're talking about a 10% decrease. Is that correct?
This is for the, well, my.
I'm talking the operating budget.
I understand that. But we haven't viewed them separately previously. We've always presented to council as a total operating budget, personnel, non-personnel costs. And the guidance at that point was a 0% increase for the bottom line. But I'm not explaining it very well, and I apologize for that. If you have a 5% increase on your personnel that you have really no control over, and that makes 60% of your budget, you've got to lower those non-operating costs by more than 5 or 6% to make up that difference. So I can't tell you the exact number, but I would say that probably in 2021, 2022, it was close. But to me, this is fairly unprecedented. It's the first time I've actually seen it this way.
Yeah.
And it's simply because we're presenting it differently and we're evaluating it in steps as opposed to looking at the entire operating expense as one group.
I appreciate that. Here's where I'm going at with this. When council sets the directive to the manager, we don't say decrease the operating expenses so we can increase the personnel expenses. We say don't increase the operating budget by more than 3%. And I think that's what we did this year. Don't increase the operating budget by more than 3%. When I was on council in the past, around 2009, years after that, we did exactly what you said, a 0% increase to the operating budget specifically. We recognized that the personnel budget would increase proportionately with whatever the agreements and contracts were. Council took an action. It was 3% increase to the operating budget, 0% increase to the operating budget. What I'm seeing right now is effectively a 10% and 8% respectively decrease to the operating budget, understanding the personnel budget is still going to increase. I've never seen or heard of this in the past. Like, I'm a simple person. I'm not an accountant. I don't know GAAP. I just know what council has done in the past. I know that I'm really impressed with all the directors for doing this collectively and for the city manager for spearheading this and for you being a part of this. I think this is phenomenal. When we set the goal for the city not to increase specifically the operating budget, by no more than 3%. That's what we expected. And at this meeting tonight, we're hearing that there's a 10% decrease to the operating budget, respectively, and a 10% decrease, respectively. And that's phenomenal. I've never heard of anything like that happening before. I remember in the past when we've set the 0% increases, like you've mentioned, specifically to the operating budget, but for the most part, most departments held to that. But very few actually reduced their budget, like what the directors in this room have done tonight. I'm tremendously impressed. And that's testament to your leadership, Mr. Hogue, and the leadership of your directors. So thank you.
Councilman Bell?
No.
Congo.
Doing this the first time, I want to see the outcome. You know, how it's going to be. It's hard to really bottom what, you know, I mean, it's yours, a decrease. But it's not really a decrease until you get those numbers when you put those two together. So I want to see it. It'll be nice to see that decrease on that operating budget, right? You know, even just 5% or so. But we still got to put those two together to be sure that that's where we can end up with. But this is a good sign, though. Thank you.
Hi, Councilman. Toby.
So I think that this is great, seeing it differently. I really like that. It just kind of breaks it down. It makes it easier for, you know, kind of everybody to, I think, see that there's actually a reduction in that versus when you get the whole budget, then you kind of see everything mixed together and it's harder to pull apart. So this is kind of nice. It's still hard when you have all these pieces together to kind of be formulating in your head when it comes time for the mill rate. You know, what is, you know, how is it going to all come together, like Councilman Tongo said. But it is nice to kind of see that, oh, okay, well, the operating expenses are, they do have a decrease, 7%, you said, was I think, or was it 10%? 10%, I think you said, up there.
The general government fund has a decrease of approximately 10% if you exclude those two maintenance items, those one-time expenses, and then on the enterprise fund side, roughly 8% across the board.
Okay, and then if we didn't include those and you had a 3% increase in personnel costs, we might, if it's 10%, then we're probably looking at a 7% reduction overall. If you put the two together, not taking into account those major capital expenses. And so, anyway, no, I think it's good, and I think it's really refreshing to see that you were able to go through the budget and kind of streamline. I looked at some of the line items, and I see there's some up and, you know, some down. But overall, it's really nice to see a decrease, and I think the community will appreciate seeing that, too. So thank you, and I appreciate all the directors, you know, trying to – it's hard to go through your budgets and say, oh, if I give it up, I'll never get it back. I know I've been there, you know, but that's not necessarily true. If you can justify it, then, yeah. It's better to, you know, do what you need to do. And if it goes down, it goes down. If it goes up, it goes up. Just, you know, it's the justification, right? So anyway, thank you. I appreciate all the hard work you guys are doing. So
in response to your thoughts on the big picture, we do have one more work session at the next meeting. We intend to present you with the personnel budget for operating, and then we will also put together the whole picture for you so that you will have that all together visually before you go into making those decisions on mill rate, etc.
Thanks. Further questions for Jim? Or Abner? Councilman Luby?
What's your t-shirt represent? I just see numbers.
If you're a baseball fan, you'll get it. If you can always Google it, but it's always fun to wear it.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Thank you. Look forward to next week or next meeting to have all the real information, personnel. All right, thanks. Anyone present wish to speak for a work session on proposed FY27? Hearing none, City Clerk, anyone comments?
No, sir, none.
Next item is work session E. Present final capital and major maintenance plan. Turn us over to City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. This is the final work session for the evening, and it's also the final work session for the CMMP. The draft reflects the last revisions, and staff will be the latest revisions, and we'll bring the plan back for adoption on April 28th. Turn it over to the planning director to walk you through the updates one more time.
Okay, thank you, Mayor, Council, and Abner for the introduction. Just a couple changes from the last draft you saw at the previous work session. First, the paving and road assessment. As we discussed a bit at the last work session, that was originally budgeted $2 million for both a study and a paving project resulting from that study. We cut out the $1.5 million for the paving study, so just $500,000 now. It is a comprehensive study, so it's looking at both paved and unpaved roads in town. And I'll also add, since the last work session, we're working with the Q Tribe to potentially re-scope a grant that they received for transportation planning that would help offset the budget for this. Depending on the results of that, we may be coming back to you later in the year looking for a budget amendment, but we'll have a more specific paving project sculpted out by them than we can provide now. The big change is for FY27, if you look at the table, you'll see a lot of the general fund, most of the general fund projects have moved from the general fund column to the 1% fund column, totaling about $14.5 million out of the 1% fund. The intention there is simply to use our more restricted funds first before we go to the general fund. So that'll be spending down most of what's in the 1% fund now. We are leaving a bit of a buffer there just in case revenues are less than budgeted. And then lastly, not a change on paper, but I do want to update where we are with this. The public safety building, it's still on the CMMP. We are not requesting funding for this year. We've started looking at alternatives for that meet the needs and are addressing the comments that council made, looking at life training facility, as well as meeting the needs for both the police and fire department. So it remains on the CMMP to recognize that, you know, we expect expenses there, but we'll be talking more about this coming year, and we can expect the scope, the budget, schedule for all of that to probably change as we talk through the alternatives for that. That is all I have. So if you have questions about those changes or the rest of the CMMP, open for them. Thanks.
Thank you, Cameron. Any questions for Cameron on CMMP? Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, is there anyone present wish to speak to the capital major maintenance plan? None? Is there anyone on phone, Zoom?
No, sir. No one wanted to speak.
None. Okay, thank you. We're that was the last item in the work session. We're next on the consent agenda, item 14, in which there are six items listed in the agenda. Absent a request from council to remove one or more items to a regular agenda for discussion, a consent agenda is adopted. So,
may I ask for us to return to regular session?
We'll make a motion.
Because we're still at work session.
That's why it's pasted or not on there. Motion to go back to the regular session.
I make a motion to go back into a regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Kungu, seconded by Councilman Shasteen. Any objections? Hearing none, we're back in the regular agenda at, it was 8:35 p.m. Back to next item is the consent agenda, with council members can move one or more items to the regular agenda for discussion. It will take without discussion and a single vote. First item for the consent item is Ordinance 2026-7, amending Unalaska Code of Ordinance, Title II, Administrative, and Title III, Personnel Modifying the Assistant City Manager's Position, Title to Deputy City Manager. And item B, under consent agenda, ordinance 2026-8. Second reading, amending Unalaskan Code of Ordinance, Title II, Administrative Title III, Personnel, Title VI, Revenue and Finance, Title B, Planning and Land Use Development, Title IX, Business License Regulation, Title XII, Animal Control, Title XIII, Public Peace, Morale, Welfare, and Safety, Title XIV, Vehicles and Traffic, and Title XVIII, Port and Ports Facility, to substitute Unalaska Police Department and Chief of Police for Unalaska Department of Public Safety and Director of Public Safety, consistent with Ordinance 2018-11, to make other corresponding changes and to repeal and replace Chapter 2.44 and Sections 14.08.080. Item under the consent agenda, resolution 2026-17, approving the mayor's appointment to a Parks, Culture, and Recreation Committee. Item D, resolution 2026-18, authorizing city manager to enter an agreement with the Unalaska Corporation for a 50-year utility easement on Tract A, base of Spit Subdivision, Plat 82-4. Aleutian Islands Recording District. Next item E, resolution 2026-19, supporting the Unalaska Coordinated Public Transit Human Service Transportation Plan. Item F, resolution 2026-20, authorizing the city manager to enter an agreement with Connect Construction for hot mix asphalt paving and services. Six items for consideration on the consent agenda. Need a motion and a second to adopt the consent agenda.
Move to adopt the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Luby. I request a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
A roll call vote of 4-0. With this vote, the council has adopted the consent agenda of items approving ordinance 2026-07, 08, 17, 18, 19, and 20. All been approved. We are now on the regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda must sign up with the city clerk. Council, a motion is only needed if they wish to discuss this matter or recommend a protest. Staff recommends no protest. Does anyone want to make a motion on item A and B? Hearing none. A and B have been approved. Proceed with item C, ordinance 2026-09. Creating a budget amendment. Amendment number 6, establishing revenue and expenditure budget amounts for the sustainability fund. May I have a motion and a second to introduce ordinance 2026-09. And schedule it for public hearing and second reading on April 28, 2026.
Move to adopt ordinance 2026-09 and schedule it for second reading and public hearing on April 28, 2026.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, second by Councilman Tungle. I'll turn this over to the city manager for introduction.
And I will turn it over to the finance director.
Thanks, sir. You have in front of you a budget amendment. This really recognizes and to me kind of closes the loop on the establishment of the sustainability fund. At the time I wrote this particular memo that is included with the budget amendment, we've had 2.5 months roughly of activity, which has allowed us to gauge an idea of what interest revenue will look like, as well as costs associated with the management and custodial services of the portfolio. The budget amendment you have in front of you this evening recognizes those. And the plus side of this is there's more coming in than going out. That's always a good thing. And I don't really have much else to add to the budget amendment. It's fairly self-explanatory. And truly, to me, this is an administrative item and closes the loop on the establishment. But if council has any questions, comments, I'll do my best to respond.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on 2026-09? Anybody else? Okay. Nobody else? Okay, thanks. Turn us over to City Clerk. Is anyone on public comment?
No, sir. No one would like to make a comment on this item. Great.
I'll restate the motion on Ordinance 2026-09 to adopt halfway.
Introduce, Mayor, to introduce Ordinance 2026-09, creating Budget Amendment Number 6 to the Fiscal Year 2026 Budget, establishing revenue and expenditure budget amounts for the Sustainability Fund, and schedule it for a public hearing and second reading on April
28th. Good, thank you. Request a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
The results are 4 yes, 0 nays. With this vote, the council has introduced and scheduled Ordinance 2026-09 to public hearing second reading on April 28, 2026. Next item is council directives to the city manager. I think to make things easier, we need to, regarding that sustainability when you were dealing with early, you wanted to have it at every meeting or quarterly?
We don't need directive for any of that, Mr. Mayor.
I'm just asking what was the final result. The quarterly or just monthly?
We'll put it on the monthly report, and if we need to adjust the frequency later, we can do that.
I know it's bouncing back and forth, and I didn't hear specifically when I'd like to get Jim to work on it every week, but that's okay. Thanks, Tim. All right. I just got the figure. Let's see. No directors of community input and announcements. This final opportunity to provide information to council or make announcements. Are there any further announcements? City Clerk, is anyone on written or Zoom?
No, sir. No one would like to make their final announcement for the evening.
Okay, thank you. Need a motion to go into executive session.
I move to adjourn into executive session to discuss upcoming negotiation with Inland Boatman Union of the Pacific Alaska region and Alaska Career Firefighters, Local 5315. Present at this executive session will be the mayor, city council, and interim city manager, Abner Hogue. And to receive legal update regarding McLaughlin Bear versus the city of Unalaska and Hamco. Present on this executive session will be the same people with Marjorie Beater.
Which second?
Second.
Councilman Luby moved second. Councilman Tungle moved. We want the executive session. Hearing no objection, we're in executive session at 8:45. Take a 5-minute break.